Welcome back to the Business Leaders of America podcast, where business leaders come to share their advice and journeys to success with existing and emerging leaders of America. Join us as we delve into the minds of these accomplished individuals, uncovering the strategies and insights that have propelled them to the top. Whether you're an established leader or an emerging force in the business world, this podcast is your go-to source for the knowledge and inspiration needed to navigate the dynamic landscape of American business. Now, here's your host, Dylan Bloyd.
Welcome back to the Business Leaders of America podcast. Today, we have the honor of hosting retired Lieutenant Colonel Oakland McCullough, a distinguished keynote speaker and author renowned for his expertise in leadership development. With over 40 years of experience, including 23 years as a combat arms officer in the United States Army, Oakland brings a wealth of insights into the realm of effective leadership. Oakland is the author of the 2021 release, Your Leadership Legacy, Becoming the Leader You Were Meant to Be, a book grounded in his extensive leadership journey. Throughout our conversation, we'll explore the essence of servant leadership, invaluable lessons from Oakland's leadership odyssey, and the significance of mentorship in grooming future leaders. Join us as we delve into Oakland's remarkable insights and discover how his leadership legacy continues to shape the landscape of business and beyond. I first want to say thank you for your service, sir, and welcome to the show, Oak.
Yeah, well, thanks, Dylan. I appreciate it. I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, same here. I'm excited to have you. I'm excited for this conversation. So if you could please give us an intro on yourself and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, that long journey. Like we were discussing before the show, you know, I grew up in a small town, 1,200 people, small little farm town in Northern Illinois. Played three sports, played baseball, basketball, football. I was president of student government. So I had some leadership positions in high school, captain of my sports teams. Then I went off to college, got my degree, and went through Army ROTC, got my commission as an Army officer. My first 5 years in the Army, I was an infantry officer. My last 18 years, I was an armored cav officer. During that time, did some deployments. I had the first Gulf War, 1990-91, as an infantry officer. And then as an armor guy, I had Bosnia and Kosovo peacekeeping operations. Mm-hmm. Did a couple humanitarian missions, Hurricane Hugo in Charleston, Hurricane Andrew down here in Homestead, Florida. And when I retired from the Army, I ran a food bank for 2 years along the Gulf Coast, the Gulf of Mexico, three states, 52 counties. So I had the whole Gulf Coast of Mississippi, mm-hmm. the whole Gulf Coast of Alabama, and about a third of the panhandle of Florida. And I took over that job about a month before the BP oil spill. Mm-hmm. So I was a little bit busy during that time. And then the last 12 years, I've been recruiting for Army ROTC as a Department of the Army civilian, and retired from that job in October. And now I'm just concentrating on writing my second book and doing speaking engagements, getting out and talking to as many people as I can about leadership.
Wow, that is incredible. Well, like I said, I cannot thank you enough for your service. You mentioned the sports, going to a smaller school, getting to play three sports. I know we talked about it a little bit before the conversation started. You mentioned you played quarterback and safety. So did that kind of lead you towards a leadership journey?
Certainly did. Yeah, yes. Certainly did. And I was lucky in that I had a couple coaches in high school who believed in the servant leadership type of leadership like I believe in mm-hmm. now. And, you know, number one was my high school basketball coach, Coach Terry Nizwicki, who I still stay in contact with. Mm. He understood that it wasn't just about building a good basketball team. It was about developing young men to be good young men when they graduated from high school, productive members of society, good fathers, good husbands, good citizens. And my high school history teacher was that like that as well, who I kept in touch with all these years until he died about a month and a half ago. But yeah, and then I was the captain of my teams. And so I started to learn that leadership isn't just about you. Mm-hmm. And especially as a captain of a team, you know, not just an individual sport, but a team sport, you start to figure out that it's not about you. It's about right. the other people on the team. It's about the team and its goals and aspirations and that. And so it certainly did have a started me down that road of leadership. That's when I really kind of figured out that that's kind of what I wanted to do, is be a leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the reason I asked is just I had a similar experience playing sports quarterback that really led me towards wanting to get into leadership as well. And I think the some of the best coaches you mentioned it were the ones that really talked about making you a better human in life rather than worrying about winning the next game. They're trying to build better humans, you know, and people who can take care of their families later in life. And so those were always the speeches that really resonated with me. And so
Right.
that was, yeah, I do appreciate you touching on that.
Well, you know, and that leads me to, you know, people ask me all the time because I talk about reading books about leadership, and they ask me what my favorite leadership book is, and they're always shocked that it has nothing to do with the military. My favorite leadership book is by John Wooden on leadership. And
Nice.
you talk about somebody who understood his job wasn't to create national championship basketball teams. Now, he did that six in a
Yes.
row. I mean, he was
Right.
obviously very successful at that piece of it, but he understood that his job was to create young men that were going to grow up to be good people in society. And he did that. And you can look at the people he coached and how much they appreciate and stayed in touch with him all those years and had nothing but great things to say about him. And it's because he did believe in servant leadership, that it wasn't about him and it wasn't about an individual. It was about the group.
Right.
It was about making individuals better so the group could be better. And so that I firmly believe in that.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of servant leadership, could you discuss the concept of servant leadership and its importance in today's business landscape?
Yeah, so I think there's a huge misconception with a lot of people out there what servant leadership is. When I mention servant leadership, a lot of times I get the answer, well, I don't want to be a servant leader because I don't want people walking all over me. And I said, then you have no idea what servant leadership means because that has nothing to do with that. In fact, being a servant leader means you are going to have to make people do things they don't want to do at the time, because they don't understand that it's in their best interest. It is in their best interest, and they will eventually figure that out. But you're gonna have to make people do things they don't want to do, and you're gonna have to hold them to standards that they don't want to meet. But servant leadership to me is very simple. I was lucky in my 15 years of working in Army ROTC, I had my hand in commissioning over 580 lieutenants for the Army and leaders for our nation. And I told every single one of them, I would always tell them, look, it's not about you and it's all about you. It's not about you and the title you get or the privileges you get or that you get better pay and live in a nicer house and get to drive a nicer car. Let's face it, leaders get those things usually, and that's okay, as long as that's not the only reason you want to be the leader. If that's the only reason you want to be a leader, please go do something else
Yes.
because you're never going to be a good one. It's all about you, and this is what servant leadership is about. It is all about you in how you empower and treat the people that you have the privilege to lead, and it is a privilege to be the leader, and how you run your organization. That's what servant leadership is about. It's about other people, it's about the organization. You know, the other thing I used to tell them is, look, the day they got commissioned, I went up to every single one of them and I said, look, congratulations. Celebrate today because today is all about you. You get to do something that very few people get to do. You get to become an officer in the United States Army. But understand this, now that we've pinned those bars on your shoulder, it will never be about you ever again. It's about the people you're leading. It's about the mission. It's about the unit the company you're in, the Army, the nation. And then if we have time, we might talk about you, maybe, maybe.
Oh, I love that. I mean, it's true in every aspect, in sports, in business, in the military. I'm assuming, obviously, I haven't been, but it's all about the collective group. You know, it's all one unit rather than just the individual. And so if you're a leader, you can't just focus on yourself. And there are plenty of leaders out there like that. And
Oh,
you know,
just
it
look around.
right. Yeah. And so that it's how we can come together and work as a team to get this, you know, finish this task or whatever it may be.
Well, you know, one of the things that, and I'm a firm believer that leadership is leadership. You know, because I get people sometimes tell me, well, Colonel McCullough, you know how to lead in the Army, but you don't know anything about leading in the civilian world. And I said, are you crazy? Leadership is leadership. It's about people. People and trust, that's what leadership is about. And it doesn't matter where you learned it, it doesn't matter where you practiced it. If you understand it's about people and trust, then you can lead any organization. And I prove that. Look, I ran it in the Army. I was a combat arms officer. I fought our nation wars, you know, And then when I left, I ran a food bank. You don't get any different than that. That's 180 degrees difference.
Right.
And, you know, when I took that food bank over, we were handing out 1.2 million pounds of food a year.
Wow.
When I handed it off 2 years later, about 18 months later, actually, we were handing out 3.8 million pounds of food. I had doubled the size of the truck fleet, and I had almost doubled the size of the staff. It's about people and trust. And mm-hmm. if you know those things, you can run any organization.
Right. Did you have any issues transitioning from that to like the civilian world as far as like the respect level when you were leading people? Was it a little bit different than having military subordinates listening to you and kind of doing exactly what you tell them? Was it different transitioning?
Well, I think it depends on what type of leader you were in the Army or in the military. If you're one of those authoritarian, you're going to follow me because I have a title, then mm-hmm. yeah, you're going to have a problem out in the civilian world. I never was that. You know, in my 23 years on active duty, I can count on one hand the number of times I either yelled at somebody or I told them, look, I'm the officer and you're going to do what I tell you to do.
Gotcha.
And I count every one of those times as a failure as a leader.
Hmm.
Now, you know, you're going to run into some of those people who are just subordinate, aren't going to follow even in the military.
Right.
And every once in a while, you got to do that. But, you know, I was always one of those leaders that tried to involve everybody when I could.
Mm-hmm.
Look, there's times when you can't. I got it when, you know, in the military, when people are shooting at you, or in the civilian world, when you got to make a snap decision right now, I got it. You can't include everybody in that decision-making process or in helping to solve a problem or whatever.
Right.
But when you can, you should. And if you approach leadership in that fashion, that it's about, you're the person in charge. You're the one that's got your name is on the blame line. Let's not sugarcoat that at all. You're the one that's right. always responsible for everything that does or doesn't happen in your organization.
Mm-hmm.
But that if you use the talents, skills, and knowledge and abilities of the people in your organization, you're going to get a much better product than if you just use your own knowledge, skills, and abilities. So I was always that way. I tried to use everybody else. So the transition from the military to the civilian world wasn't that hard for me. And the thing I always tell people is, look, again, leadership is leadership. The principles don't change no matter what organization you are leading or what type of organization. How you implement them and communicate them may change a little bit. You got to figure that piece out. And I had to do that. But the principles are the same. So as long as you know how to lead people and earn their trust, you can lead any organization.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you for that. What do you believe are some of the most valuable lessons you've learned about effective leadership that you can think can be applied across various industries? We have a lot of different listeners from different organizations, different industries. What do you think are some of the most valuable lessons that you've learned?
Yeah, two that I can give you right off the top of my head. Number one is listening skills. Communication skills in general, but mm-hmm. most people, when we talk about communication skills, they forget that listening is actually a communication skill
mm-hmm.
and they're not any good at it.
Right.
Americans, and probably most of the world, but certainly Americans, are not very good at listening. And that really got driven home to me. I was a captain and I was working for a guy who eventually ended up a 3-star general. But when I worked for him, he was a lieutenant colonel and I was a captain. And when I'd walk in the morning, I'd walk past him just about every morning, at least 3 mornings out of the week. And he got there just about the same time I did, maybe a little bit before I did. And the first time I walked by him, he said, "How you doing, Oak?" And I said, "Fine." And I kept walking. And he's, no, come here. And he said, "How are you? I want to know."
Mm-hmm.
And he sat there and I told him a little bit of something. He goes, "And how's your wife? Her name's Kelly, right?" I said, "Yeah." And I talked to him. He said, "And you got 2 kids?" And I said, "Yep, I got 2 kids." And he said, they play soccer. They're on the same soccer team as my kid. How are they doing?" And I thought, wow. And he sat there and listened to me. And here's a lieutenant. He's a busy man.
Right.
Not once did I see him look down at his watch like he had somewhere better to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I was a special person. And I don't know, about a week later, I heard him out there talking to another captain, asking the same questions. And
oh,
I thought,
wow.
Mm-hmm. You know, here, that was 1995. And I still remember it like it was yesterday.
Right.
That is part of that trust building. learn how to listen and listen to listen, not listen to say your next thing.
Yeah.
Actually try to listen to what people are saying, and you'll see a huge increase in trust and their willingness to do things for you and for the organization. And then the other piece is building community. You know, I think too many businesses out there today, as I go around and talk to businesses and organizations and associations and all the different types of conferences and places I talk, one of the things I hear is that as a leader, it's hard to get people involved. People today are coming, they look at it as, I come to work for 8 hours, I draw my paycheck, I go home. They don't care about anybody else in the office. They don't know anybody else in the office. And so I think if you really want to build an effective and efficient team, you got to build a community. And there's a couple ways to do that I've seen over the years. Number one, it starts with you doing like that Lieutenant Colonel did with me. Get out there and get to know the people that you have the privilege to lead. And if you get to know them, then they'll start seeing that's a thing, and they'll start getting to know people possibly. Number two, have some events. Have a monthly or quarterly luncheon in the office or out of the office, depending on what your budget is allowed. But have some events where you bring people together in a non-working environment so that they can get to know each other a little bit. You'd be surprised. You'll see them after you start doing that a couple times, you'll see people walking down the hallway and they'll stop and say, "Hey, John, hey, Joe, how are you?"
Right.
And they'll talk a little bit instead of just walk past each other and not even acknowledge each other. So little things like that allows that team to grow, you know, because Vince Lombardi, I'll go back to sports. Vince Lombardi said a team is not a group of people who play together or in a business work together. It's a team. It's a group of people who trust each other. And when I talk about trust, you know, I talk about 360 degree trust, because most people understand the trust piece of the people you lead have to trust you.
Right.
And that's, let's not kid ourselves, that's the number one piece. Without that, nothing else matters.
Yeah.
But that's only part of it. The leader then has to trust the person they're leading. That's what allows that leader-led relationship. Then everybody on the team has to trust everybody else that they're going to do the right thing and do their job. And then in the business world, you can take it one step further and you say that the people you're doing business with outside your organization have to trust you, and you have to trust them. Because trust me, they're not doing business with you if they don't trust you. And I hope you're not doing business with them if you don't trust them.
Right.
So it really is that 360 degree trust. And the way you get there, the way you start to get there, is through building a community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love those two pieces. The communication factor, I had a pretty good lesson taught to me similar to this, is one of my bosses told me, I want you to go out every day and learn something about someone every day. And that's... then you can follow back up with that the next day. You know, if you talk about their family, you know, if something's going wrong, you can follow back up, and they start to take that, and they know that you're not just being, you know, just doing it to do it. You actually care about them further than just being an employee. Yeah. And
absolutely.
Yeah. And then kind of piggybacking off of about doing the events, going a little further on that. Another thing with the managers, they need to make sure that they're engaging with the employee. Just because you put an event on doesn't mean you get to just be like, all right, there you go, here it is. You should be sitting down and speaking with them and engaging with them. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when we would have events, even in ROTC, we'd have an event. And first event I walked into, I saw all the upperclassmen sitting out at one table and all the brand new freshmen sitting in another table. I said, no, stop. You go sit at that table. You sit at that table. I said, we are accomplishing nothing with you guys all sitting at the same table. I don't ever want to see that happen again.
Nice.
And I think it's the same way in a business. You know, if you got all your managers sitting together talking, but all the other people are out there, you're not accomplishing anything.
Right.
It's got to be that interaction, and sometimes you have to force that in the beginning, but once you do it, then it becomes second nature and people start doing that.
Yeah. I mean, managers get busy, you know, so that open door policy can only last, can be only so effective, right? So those events, you really want to make sure that your time is utilized to communicate with those people, build those relationships with your team. And like you said, they'll start trusting you a whole lot more.
Yeah. Well, and another way, you know, I had a boss who retired, a 3-star general, who was a good mentor of mine. And he told me one day, he said, "Oak, I don't care how high up in the organization you get, never, ever, ever turn down your chance to go get your own cup of coffee. Mm. He said, two things happen when you do that. Number one, you show everybody else that you're no better than they are. You've got to go get your own cup of coffee just like they do.
Yeah.
And number two, if you're lucky, you got two or three different ways to get to the coffee pot and back to your office. And along the way, you stop and talk to people. He said, and you will see a huge difference in the organization.
Wow. No, that is very great information. You did mention the misconception of servant leadership, but I did want to ask, what misconceptions do you encounter about leadership as a whole? And do you speak a lot about those in your keynote speeches?
I do. I do. There's two that I see a lot today, and they're kind of connected. I see that leaders today, and look, I got it. Money gets tight. You got to cut things. Mm. Unfortunately, the two things they cut, which I think is horrible, is professional development and training. Mm. And which makes no sense.
No.
Because that's what's going to get you out of trouble, yeah, is leaders who are better leaders and workers who are better trained. That's what's going to get you out of your hard times. So I tell people all the time, you got to have a professional development, not just for the leaders, but for everybody. And now, obviously, different levels of professional development. Mm-hmm. But here's why that's important, that you do it for everybody. If I just joined your organization brand new, and I have aspirations to be a leader someday, and you aren't showing me a path of how to get there through some training, then I'm going somewhere that does.
Yes.
So you may be losing some of your best people to other people, but just because you don't have a professional development program for them. Even if that person never gets into a leadership thing, any training you give them in leadership is going to improve your organization. Mm-hmm. So it's a win-win. And then the training piece, I get told all the time by people as I go around, well, that person just doesn't meet the standard. And the first question I ask them is, did you train them to that standard?
Yeah.
Well, no, I assume they could do the job. Okay. And then you get you deserve what you get. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. You can't hold somebody to a standard that you haven't trained them to and make sure that they can do the things you're asking them to do. So you got to have a professional development program and you got to have a training program. If you don't have those two things, your business is in trouble.
Yeah, I believe that wholeheartedly. It's one thing to have it put together, but if you don't implement it and stay with it, your team's never going to grow. And I've seen it at both sides, you know, companies who really stick with it and then companies who are just like, when we get time, but we just got to make sure we're getting the work done today.
Yeah.
Okay. But then that person leaves because they've asked us 100 times why they haven't been trained. When am I going to get trained? And you continue to just blow them off. Eventually they're going to leave for a better opportunity. And a lot of the times leaders will be scratching their head. Like, why is this person, where did I miss? And it missed because you promised this person 100 different things and you never followed up with it.
Yeah, so that is, you know, and again, you know, go back to the sports analogy, pick a sport in any sport, any professional sport. Who are the best teams consistently? They're the teams that build from the bottom. Mm-hmm. They're the teams who build from the draft. They're the teams that build from their minor league. They're not the teams that go out and get the free agent for 1 year, pay ungodly amount of money for them. They may win that year, but next year when that free agent goes somewhere else, they won't win again. The teams that win consistently, the best teams, consistently best teams, are the ones who build from inside their organization. And businesses are no different.
Right. Yeah. Building that solid foundation. No, that's absolutely true. So kind of getting into it, but as far as the mentorship, and I've seen a lot of the videos that you've kind of posted and other conversations you've had, you talk about mentorship. So what role do you believe mentorship plays in developing future leaders? And how do you personally approach mentoring others in leadership?
Yeah, so I believe mentorship is huge. The two things I always tell people at a conference or any opportunity I get is have a mentor, be a mentor. And I don't care how high up in the organization you get, I don't care if you're the CEO, the president, whatever, you still need a mentor. When I say that to somebody who's the top guy in their organization, they say, well, it's lonely here at the top. I said, it's only lonely there if you let it be. You can go find somebody in another profession.
Yes.
That's the equivalent of you that you can bounce ideas off of and use as a mentor or be a mentor too. you know, and maybe both, maybe you're a mentor to each other. You've got some skills he needs and she's got some skills you need. I mean, right. Who knows? But you have to have a mentor and you have to be a mentor. If you're if you call yourself a leader and you're not mentoring somebody, you're not a leader, mm-hmm. period. Because leaders produce the next generation of leaders. That's your responsibility.
Right.
And I take it very seriously. I still have, of those 580 something lieutenants who I helped commission, a bunch of them stay in contact with me. Not every week, not every day, you know, right. not even every month, but when they get a promotion or they, a lot of times when somebody's getting ready to move to a new duty assignment and they're offering them two different jobs, they'll call me and say, okay, sir, which one would you recommend? Now, in the end, it's still their choice, but it's nice to have somebody who can give you some advice, who's had some experience, who been around the block a couple times. So you got to be a mentor to people. You got to get that. That's our responsibility. You've probably heard me use this, but when I was running my ROTC program at the University of South Alabama, I had a guy who worked for me, and I said he worked for me, but he was probably a better leader than I was. Huh. Master Sergeant David Powell, and who I still stay in contact with. Mm-hmm. And one day we were talking about the significance of what we were doing, helping to create that next generation of leaders for the Army and the nation. And he said to me, he said, you know, sir, great leadership handed down from generation to generation is what develops great nations. And I thought, wow, what a powerful quote. And I wish I could take credit for it, but I can't. Master Sergeant David Powell. And the most powerful thing to that quote, of that quote for me, is that you can take that word nations and you can substitute anything you want for it. Mm-hmm. A business, a hospital, a university, a sports team, a food bank. Doesn't matter, because every organization and every profession needs good leadership. And what keeps that organization moving forward and growing and becoming better is the great leadership that you've handed down to the next generation. As people like me get old and go off, somebody's got to step in and take my place. Mm-hmm. And if we don't do a good job, we are going to reap what we sow. Mm-hmm. I promise you. If the leadership of today does not do a good job of producing the next generation of leaders, we deserve what we get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read somewhere the other day that even the richest people in the world haven't figured out how to live forever, you know? So we have to start developing these leaders down the road. And
you do.
Yeah. And it's, I'm glad that you mentioned about even the top CEOs, the top people in their organization still should have mentors, because the second you start believing that you know everything, that's when you're going to start seeing problems. You know, it's like,
well, you need to go do something else.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Because I'm no matter where you're at, you probably don't know it all, you know, and there's probably some great ideas out there. And so, no, absolutely agree. So I did want to shift gears a little bit. Can you speak a little bit about the Mend the Heart Foundation, its mission, and your role in supporting its objectives?
Yeah, Matt Michelson, who originally started it, he and I connected on LinkedIn and became good friends. He was in the Navy, and I don't hold that against him. Mm-hmm. He was in the Navy, I'm in the Army, so we were both officers in the military, and that kind of tied us a little bit. And then we're both Christian men, which then tied us together even a little bit more.
Yeah.
And so he started telling me about his foundation. And then it was when I first started being involved, it was the Lazy Lab Hunt Club. It wasn't Mend the Heart. Okay. And then it switched names later on, but it's the same organization.
Okay.
And they really do help not only veterans, which I have a lot of feelings to, I try to help the veterans in any way I can. Mm-hmm. When people ask for me to do things for an organization that helps veterans, but he also helps active duty soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and it doesn't matter. I mean, he's Navy, but he helps people from all branches. Mm-hmm. And really does give them a way to help recharge their battery and kind of rethink their life and what's important in life. Because we all get so busy that we forget what's really important.
Right.
You know, I always say, people ask me how I stay balanced. And I say, it's for me, it's the 4 S, you know, faith, family, and fishing.
Nice.
So
love that.
But you got to figure that out. And when you get really busy, sometimes you forget what mm-hmm. it is that it keeps you grounded. And I think in his organization, that he's put together. They're really helping people figure that out.
Oh, that is great. Yeah, for any listeners that are looking into or know somebody who needs assistance, that's great foundation to look into.
Yeah, it is.
So where can listeners connect with you and also pick up your book, Your Leadership Legacy?
Yeah, so the same place we connected, LinkedIn. That's the social media I use the most. I'm on all the social media, but really LinkedIn's the one I use. And I have a website that you can go to, and it has a link to all my social media. And it also has my cell phone number and my email address. If you ever want to call and talk to me about something, I'm happy to do that. If you want to call and discuss hiring me to come talk at one of your conferences or a training event at your company or whatever, I'm going to be down at Oviedo, Florida at the end of the month talking to a construction company, to the leaders of the construction company. Happy to do that. My book is on Amazon. And it's available in hardcover, paperback, ebook, and Audible. And I did the reading for the Audible. The only other voice on that is my wife's. She did about the author and the foreword, since she wrote the foreword. And if you want a signed copy, then again, contact me in one of those ways and we can figure out a way to get you a signed copy.
Perfect. Yeah, not many people have 40 years of experience. So I highly recommend you guys reaching out. And if you want to have Oak speak to your organization, I know that he would provide tons of value. So thank you for mentioning that. And all those links and everything will be in the show notes to make it a little bit easier for the listeners as well. All right, Oak, I do have one more question before we go. I do appreciate you taking time spending with me and the listeners. But what advice do you have for emerging leaders who aspire to leave a positive leadership legacy in their respective fields? And what steps would you advise they take to make a meaningful impact?
Yes. Oh, that's a great question. So, you know, legacy obviously means a lot to me. I titled my book, Your Leadership Legacy. So, you know, legacy is important to me. And for me, legacy has two parts. Number one, and a very small part of your legacy, is what you accomplished. Now, that does matter. In the real world, results matter. You know, in fantasy land where everybody gets a trophy and everybody's a winner, maybe not. But in the real world that we live in, results do matter. So you got to get results. That's part of your legacy. But if that's the only part of your legacy, if that's what you're tying your legacy to, then when you leave that organization and the new person comes in and changes everything, now it's their legacy, not yours. Where did your legacy go? So your legacy really is that next generation of leaders that you produced. That's what your legacy is. Because even after you leave, they'll still be there carrying on the things that you taught them. So for me, the things I tell young leaders, number one, same thing somebody told you, get out there and get to know the people that you have the privilege to lead. Get out from behind your desk and go walk around, talk to people. And the advice you gave is exactly the same advice that you got, is the exact same advice I give people. Two pieces of this: find one person and get to know something personal about them, their spouse's name, their kids' names, what sports do their kids play, whatever. And then the other piece of it is, go out and make a positive difference in at least one person's life every day. As a leader, you are going to make a difference in people's lives every day, promise, guaranteed. Why not make a conscious decision to make a positive difference in one person's life every day? And if you do that, imagine how much better our families would be, our workplace, our neighborhoods, our communities, our cities, our towns, our state, our country, the world would be, if everybody went out and made one positive difference every day in somebody's life.